Welcome to CVM Connect. I'm Kim Fuger, and I am very excited to sit down today and talk to Noah Bethel of PDMA. Hi, Noah. How are you?
Hi, Kim, and hello from sunny Tampa, Florida.
Very sunny Tampa, Florida this time of year.
Yes. Too sunny sometimes.
Too sunny, yes. Well, today, Noah and I will be talking about machine train analysis using electrical equipment. And to get us started, Noah, can you define machine train for everyone?
Yes, it's fairly broad, actually, but I like to think of it as everything on the other side of the coupling. I know that's a very generic statement, but when you think of motors, which is kind of our expertise, motors are connected through a coupling to a load, right? So literally everything on the other end of that coupling, and including the coupling, is considered machine train. Things like, you know, bearings, gears, belts and pulleys, fans and the fan blades associated with them, compressors and compressor stages, turbines, literally every rotating apparatus that anyone in the industrial maintenance, industry thinks of. Like if you're in the cement industry, it'd be like raw mills or finishing mills, anything like that we consider machine train. It's things that are historically, you know, analyzed using more of a mechanically based technology. So hopefully that kind of describes it.
That does. Thank you. And how does electrical testing equipment look at the machine train health?
So that's the magic, right? When we talk about electrical test equipment, we're commonly, and certainly in our situation at PDMA, we're referring to voltage and current measurements. And so, you know, you think, okay, we're taking voltage and current measurements to identify the health of the electrical systems, everything from power quality to power circuit to the stator, you know, windings and stuff like that. But in reality, you can use those voltage and current measurements to actually see anomalies and see what's going on with some of the machine train items. And specifically, if we think about, you know, what does voltage and current create? It's a magnetic field, right? So the stationary or the stator portion of the motor, it creates a rotating magnetic field, right? It's invisible, no one can see it. But that induces power onto the rotor, right, in the form of a magnetic field. So magnetically, we're inducing power onto the rotor that creates its own magnetic field. And then there's a torque developed between the rotor and the stator. Well, the rotor of the motor is connected through the coupling to the machine train items that we discussed earlier, right? So the beauty of that is while we're looking at the voltage and current from the stator windings, we're seeing influence all the way from the machine train components through the shaft onto the rotor and through the air gap between the rotor and the stator. So that torque, any change in the load, and it could be normal change, like if you got compressors or, you know, fans that are you know, blade pass frequencies that are passing the outlet plenum or a pump stage or something. As that normal operation changes torque, it basically can be seen in what we consider a demodulated spectrum. So we take that current or that voltage and we break it down to look at these very small, minute torsional changes, and we identify machine train items. And so that kind of gives hopefully a vague idea on how we take either a normal operation or even a fault. In fact, to go into a little bit more, if the fan blade is defective or off balance, that's going to create a torsional change in the load that'll be seen through demodulated, you know, values on a spectrum. As it passes from the rotor through to the stator and onto the stator current and voltage signals.
Oh, thank you, Noah, for going into that a bit for everybody here. Now, how does this approach to machine train analysis compare using vibration testing for machine train analysis?
So that's a great question. And I say that because if anyone's listening that is, you know, they make their profession or their careers around primarily vibration analysis, occasionally the question gets asked with a little bit of sensitivity, like, you know, are you taking over the vibration industry? Are you going to be, you know, surpassing that? And the answer from PDMA Corporation, at least, is no. The two technologies are very different. They're what I call first tier and second tier relationships, right? When it comes to, like, you know, and saying that, meaning that they have their specialties and that's where they're best left, as a primary tool. So that being said, they are very correlative, and you'll hear me talk a lot about bridging of technologies, right? If we talk about like, let's talk about like bearing analysis. So it's a very, you know, fundamental base application of vibration analysis. So whether it's natural bearing frequencies or defect frequencies, those can create torsional loads without a question. We might, and we will see them on the voltage and current signal. But by the time that we're sensing them, and primarily we're sensing them through more of a qualitative measurement, I'll go into that a little bit later, where vibration is really more focusing in on a quantitative measurement, right? So when it comes to a bridge, you know, we'll go halfway across into the machine train world, just like vibration will come halfway across into the electrical world. So, and that's where kind of the first tier, second tier technology reference comes in. If you're looking to evaluate rotor degradation, let's say, you know, and a rotor is a key part of the electrical motor, right? And the rotor cage is an electrical component, which has, you know, voltage induced onto it and current flowing through it, and it creates its own magnetic field. The first tier technology to analyze rotor health is always going to be electrical test equipment. Okay. It's right in our wheelhouse, right? We can see it in so many different ways and so sensitive on early levels all the way till it's time to do something about it. Where vibration can also see rotor degradation, they're more of a second tier technology when it comes to electrical components, right? So it's not that we don't want them to say, hey, we're seeing elevated, you know, pull pass frequencies, sidebands around the running speed, you know, the mechanical running speed on our vibration signal. But by the time they see that, it's probably elevated and to a certain level where we can say, hey, when it gets quantitatively, you know, 45 dB down from the line frequency, there's a level of we need to do something about it, right? Qualitatively, instead, like the vibration might say, hey, we have elevated sidebands, you know, let's look into that. They'll call the electrical department and go look into it. Well, vice versa, the same thing works. If we see something going on with the gear, let's say we're doing electrical testing and we start to say, hey, we're seeing elevated, you know, secondary or third shaft frequencies associated with gear reduction, we know that there's possibly something going on. We can even identify it as something to do with the specific gear and shaft associated with the secondary or third stage of reduction. But we really don't necessarily know how bad it is, right? So we're going to call the, you know, the more of the vibration team, you know, the mechanically inclined reliability team and say, hey, can you go take a look at that? And they're going to go take a look at it. And with their measurements, we're going to be able to determine when too much is too much, you know, through actual movement of the hardware. You know, they're looking at how much is this piece of machinery actually moving physically and when does damage occur. We're looking at current and voltage signals and assessing the fact that that mechanically or that machine train item is creating more torsional variations than it was previously. So hopefully that kind of allows you to kind of picture that bridge where electrical technology will cross halfway over to help out the you know, the vibration team and assessing, you know, anomalies. And vice versa, the vibration team can come halfway over that bridge and also give some information, some qualitative information on electrical diagnostic as well.
Oh, that is great. And I love to hear the bridging of technologies from you, because that's a really good blended word to use for the different technologies all working together.
Agreed.
Yes. So everybody does always love to hear a case study when we are talking about different equipment, cases, any of that. Could you share one where electrical testing was used to identify a machine train anomaly?
I could share a lot, Kim. How much time do I have?
As much time as you need, Noah.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We'll just see where it leads us. So okay. one of my favorite was, you know, we PDMA recently is, in fact, in next month in October, we're going to officially be releasing some permanently installed technology like is occurring all over the industry. The vibration industry, as an example, has been installing permanently installed technology for a while. And we're getting involved in that from an electrical perspective. Well, the case study I like to share is just happens to be one of the beta sites that we had installed into the cement industry. And this was like a 4,000 volt, you know, 2,000 horsepower, very large synchronous motor. And effectively, you know, we were seeing, you know, we're doing all kinds of voltage and current spectral analysis and you know, quantitative measure of electrical, you know, electrical measurements basically. And up popped a frequency at 135, equivalent of 135 RPM. So, you know, we're looking at the current spectrum as it applies to electrical, but we can also convert that hertz, which is the electrical units for spectral analysis to RPM, right? So we knew something popped up at 135 RPM, wasn't really sure what was going on. Now, if you can imagine this system, this is a mill. So it basically converts, raw material into fine cement powder, I guess, to some extent. And what they do is they run a large horizontally mounted synchronous motor through a reduction gear, a 90 degree reduction gear, which goes vertical. Okay. And what we found out that it's a 35-to-1 ratio on the gear. And we found this out as a result of us looking into why we had two identical motors being monitored, which is always a great piece of information. We always refer to it like the Sesame Street song, which one of these is not like the other. It's a great tool. Anyway, for those of you who used to watch Sesame Street, you'll relate to that song. And so in this situation, we had two identical, raw mills to look at. And one of them had a dominant 135 RPM peak. So as we did our homework and went backwards, we determined that the 1200 RPM synchronous motor was reduced to 33.9 RPM, right? And sure enough, if you take 33.9 RPM and you multiply that by a certain number, you find that it's exactly 135 RPM. So what we were able to quickly diagnose is that at four times the output of the secondary shaft and the gear reduction, right, that we have a big dominant peak. So we, contact the company, say, hey, is there any chance that there are four grinding rollers on the mill? So if you think about a raw mill, you've got this table that turns with material on it, and these grinding rollers press that stuff into pulverized, nice little, cement dust effectively. And sure enough, they did have four grinding rollers, and we were able to identify that, through that, machine train, frequency, that there was something going on. And sure enough, basically every once in a while, a hardened material will stick to the table and not, and it's either too hard for the rollers to crush or it's just taking too long. But either way, we picked that up, and they were able to, this would allow a company to go in, clean the table off, and prevent any damage that may result as resulting from that material. So it was a great little case study for us. And the fact that it lined up with beta test of the new technology was pretty exciting. But so that's one example. Another really good example is cooling towers, right? Cooling tower gears. We had a situation where, someone was doing a normal, this is a much smaller motor than the previous case study. This is a utility plant, 480 volt, 200 horsepower cooling tower motor. VibeTech, here's another bridging of technologies, VibeTech walking through, wasn't even actually, applying the accelerometer yet, but heard a knocking noise coming from, the direction of the gears. Now, keep in mind, there's a 25-foot shaft that disappears into the cooling tower shroud, right? So they don't actually see the gears. They just see the shaft leaving the motor going into the, into the cooling tower. So they're applying vibration analysis out at the motor, which is the right place to do it. But at the same time, they're seeing this or applying the technology, they're hearing this knocking noise. What they were able to deduct was that at least they knew the output speed, of the gear going to the actual cooling tower fan was 112 RPM or 1.86 Hertz. That's, in the electrical world, we refer to Hertz all the time, right? And so basically, looking back in history, we had electrical testing and vibration testing back to 2015 as an example, or in fact, all the data was normal. But in July of 2018, all of a sudden, multiple harmonics broke out on the current spectrum that we were monitoring, and we're applying a demodulation technology to that current spectrum to allow the machine train frequencies to be more seen and not dominated by the line frequency. But in July of 2018, all of a sudden it went from a single peak at 1.8 Hertz to elevated plus multiple harmonics of that peak. And in any technology, whether it's vibe, whether it's electrical, when you start seeing a lot of harmonics, that's always an indication of increasing, increasing problems or increasing severity is a better word. So anyway, they ended up looking into it finally based on that change. And sure enough, multiple gear teeth had been cracked and broken. So, the nice thing is they were able to schedule an outage, get in there, get the gearbox, corrected, and more importantly, shift off, that cooling tower specifically as a need for cooling, because it could fail at any time. So it was another good case study. I can't complain. And do I got time for one more?
Of course you do. Thank you.
The next one is sort of I like it because it goes back to the common age old competition of, is it the pump or the motor, right? And we're talking machine train versus electrical. So is it the pump or is it the motor? And we used to have this debate all the time on the submarine that I used to live on for many months out of the year. So in this situation, it was another utility plant. It was a 4160 volt, 1000 horsepower chiller water pump, or a chill water pump. And basically they're, normal testing routines and, in fact, if I take you back to February of 2022, normal vein pass frequency had an amp. And by vein pass frequency, again, we're dealing with a pump here instead of a fan, right? So we're moving from the fan, machine train to more of a pump machine train. But we had a 0.1 dB amplitude on the vein pass frequency. And just for those mathematicians out there, vein pass is basically the pull pass frequency, which relates to the slip between the rotor and the stator of the motor, and the actual number of vanes on the pump, right? So, but in September of that same year, all of a sudden there was a broadband energy that showed up on the spectrum. So imagine a nice clean peak, like a speed related peak, pull pass related peak, maybe a vein pass peak. And all of a sudden there's all a bunch of noise that surrounds those peaks. But we call that broadband energy. And a lot of times when it comes to electrical testing of a pump motor, and we see that, we immediately throw flags up for possible cavitation. So that's basically when you have not enough pressure for the situation, and it causes air bubbles to form, on the pump, on and around the pump vanes, and it can collapse and cause pitting of the pump and require some rebuilding. It's not good. And it also affects flow. It's less flow, and that's not a good thing either. So the decision for the plant was to overhaul the pump, which they did. And so they sent the pump in because it certainly is possible that, pump degradation or whatever can create environments for extra cavitation. And so they sent it in for the overhaul. And when it came back and was reinstalled, the same cavitation appearance was there. So, all we can say is, hey, based on the data you're sharing with us, it appears that the cavitation still exists and that we have not improved the situation. Well, at this point, they decided to throw a diver into the picture. And so they actually dove down to inspect the inlet piping to the pump. And sure enough, it was completely filled with algae, severe algae growth. Now, algae is not liquid, and it does tend to displace liquid. So if you have too little liquid flowing through there as the pump's working, it's going to drop the pressure and it's going to create a cavitation environment, which in fact was doing. The other additional thing that's kind of interesting about it was not only did they find a lot of algae, but they also found a little bit of leftover scaffolding, that was up in the piping. So that's always a good find, and no alligators or anything like that, but leftover scaffolding. So when they finally cleaned all that stuff out, or that debris out, voila, the post cleaning data brought it right back to normal with all the broadband energy gone. And sure enough, the new baseline vein pass frequency dropped from 0.1, which it was originally back in the February 22. Now the new baseline is down to 0.02. So the beauty of that is there probably was already an indication of elevated vein pass frequency created by flow disturbances. But when it really got bad enough, then the cavitation hit and then everything went crazy. But now with a really clean piping system, we've got a baseline of 0.02 dB, and we can reestablish all of our band alarms, and this will not sneak up on us again. As the algae starts to form, or alligators, form a family, or manatees in the inlet piping, we'll be able to know it. So that's my third and final case study, Kim.
Well, that's a great one to end out with, though. Lots to look forward to. Glad there was no alligators. That's always a good thing.
Yes.
All right. Well, to wrap things up today, can you tell us what the future for marine machine train analysis using test equipment looks like?
Yes. Well, that's a big deal. I think looking ahead, the term that keeps popping up inside our walls and with our customer base is machine learning. So the big thing is, we don't, on the electrical side, for all those using electrical test equipment, It's important to learn the system, right? And this is important as it pertains to the future of machine learning. As permanently installed technology is becoming popular and people are getting constant recording of operating conditions, it's going to be important for the electrical reliability technicians and analysts to know more about the machine train so they can identify the frequencies that are linked to those machine train components and now play a role in their training and analysis. With all the expectations that when you start to see elevated or harmonic information related to that specific frequency, you're on the phone contacting the alignment team, the vibration team, and making sure they're aware that, hey, we're getting machine train indications so that as a team, we can go out there and solve the problem and get through it and make sure production is at its peak. And which kind of, you know, wraps up also the future. I still think is always going to be a first tier, second tier, but a very good relationship, a very good bridging of technologies. And a lot of times with the, you know, the machine learning and the dashboard technology, I wouldn't be surprised if cross technology learning in terms of mechanical and electrical, where all this information is being pumped to an M&D center with expertise on both sides, being able to look at it and make decisions very quickly and very accurately.
Well said, and thank you so much, Noah. And before we officially close things out, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you, where could they find you?
So I work in sunny Tampa, Florida at PDMA Corporation. I would always suggest, they can reach out to the, personally to noah@pdma.com, which is a simple email, but www.pdma.com is our website, and that's always a good source of information. We do a lot of our stuff's broadcast on the CBM Connect. Everybody should be a member of that. Obviously, there probably are if they're listening to this, but so that's probably the best way to reach us.
Yes, and like Noah did say, you guys can check out cbmconnect.com to see a lot of Noah's tips and facts, webinars, other interviews that he's done. Also on YouTube, PDMA Corporation, also the Todd and Noah Show. You'd be able to find them wherever podcasts are as well. So again, Noah, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Kim. Thanks for having me.